come with me into the tormented, haunted, half-lit night of the insane. This is my work. Let me lead you into it. Let me take you into the mind of a woman.
Hi, and welcome to Beyond the Cabin in the Woods, a good ghoul's guide to horror. I'm your poltergeist, Kinsey.
I'm your poltergeist, Dr. Donna.
I'm your poltergeist, Mac. One third of the only horror movie podcast with a veterinarian on staff.
And this week, we completed our Stephen King suite with, I don't even know how to phrase it, I don't want to say infamous, Cujo. We watched Cujo this week.
Well known beyond its quality.
Yeah, I think that's a good
a good boy gone bad.
Good boy gone bad. Yep.
And that's just King.
So let's just go around. Did you like it? Did you not like it? I know all of us have seen it before. Oh no, this was your first viewing, Mac? Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah. Well. All right. Well, Max, since this was your first virginal viewing here of Cujo, I'm going to have you go first.
Yeah, it always missed me. I tried to read the novel, got about a third of the way in it. I have an interesting theory about the novel. I mean, it's infamously the one that King has no memory of writing due to his alcohol and drug use. I don't think he finished writing it. I think he turned in something real weird and unpublishable, and the publisher got a ghostwriter in there to write it, because it has very bland summer reading vibes. It has that same undercurrent that a lot of summer blockbuster books have, where it's, you know, it's about something scary, but ultimately it's about a housewife who's brave enough to sleep with somebody else. If you've ever read Jaws, it's not about a shark. It's about the sheriff's wife sleeping with Richard Dreyfuss. So, you know, that's...
Wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yes, I'm gonna unpack, it's true.
I'm going to unpack that later after we finish recording this, but...
So, yeah, I did not finish the book. I got about a third of the way through it and gave up. And the movie is, at least from the part that I read, a surprisingly faithful adaptation of that book. I hear that the ending is changed significantly, but all the issues I had with the book are in the movie. Like, it's at some point I had Jeff Goldblum's voice in Jurassic Park. Like, there are going to be killer dogs in your killer dog movie, aren't there? Takes a while to get to the promise of the film. It's kind of sloppily made. It's not everybody at the it's not the A-team making this movie. Dee Wallace is nice, but Dee Wallace is fundamentally good.
She's always a delight.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, good, it's her. And then a couple of the supporting players are people I've seen before in things, like the guy from Deep Throat from the X-Files is the detective who shows up for half a minute in the end.
Kind of what he did in the first season of the X-Files. So
yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So no, I didn't like the movie. I don't like the book. I think it's a very flimsy premise to make a full-length story out of. And they've done it, I guess. So cool.
I have seen Cujo several times. I don't hate it. It's definitely not my favorite Stephen King movie. The thing I like about it is right up until the point that Cujo is full on rabid, it's actually a really good depiction of rabies. It is a
this
really
is the
good
big question I had for you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good depiction of an animal getting sick with rabies. Now, once he's full on rabid, rabies does not give you superpowers. Okay. Rabies is killing you. It doesn't make you smart.
That was my
enough.
Thinking. Right. It doesn't make you cold and calculating and strategizing how to get Dee Wallace in the car. Like, I'm going to stick around here. I'm going to cut him off over here. I'm like, no, I think you're just crazy, right?
Yeah. If you didn't know how to open a car door before, don't suddenly know how to open a car door, right? But up until then, it's really pretty good. So I like that. Dee Wallace, of course, just her mere presence in the film makes the film better. I have some pretty serious issues with it. Of course, one of my big issues, I think, actually was in the book, which is something I'm going to rant about quite a bit at the end, which is when two people who should have a conversation don't have a conversation.
Yeah.
But overall, it's not one of the worst Stephen Kings. We
No.
already did
No.
the worst Stephen King, but it's definitely not one of the best either.
Like, I almost wonder if another filmmaker might have made more hay out of this. Like, if Carpenter got involved in it, would it have been better?
The thing I have always found intriguing about this particular story is that it's something that could plausibly have happened in that time. Okay, it would be a lot harder for it to happen now, but at the time it's set, it could plausibly have happened. The family that owns the dog could be gone. The father could be gone. The car could break down. The mail could have been stopped. It could be far enough out in the boonies and nobody could know where she is. I mean, that set of circumstances could have legitimately happened. That could be real. And that's something I've always found intriguing, that could have happened.
When it's that moment of bad things happening all at once, the story works. When it's a family drama, it's very bland. And when it's super dog, it's unbelievable. But there's that narrow window where it's like, okay, that's unsettling.
Yeah, it's the worst day of your life kind of thing. I have seen this before. This is one that I do remember because it was on TV quite a bit, as most Stephen King films were back in the 80s. I saw it quite a bit. It's fine. It's not definitely not my favorite King adaptation, and honestly, I spend most of the time watching this movie, one, looking at the four different Saint Bernards and deciding which one's the prettiest. And then I am very angry at the family who owns said Saint Bernard by making it an outside dog when it's very hot in the summertime, and I take issues with that. So that's what I spend most of my time doing, is judging. I'm judging everyone in Cujo, usually starting out with the family that owns Cujo. So it's fine. It's definitely not one that I seek out. Both of you guys have said some of the good points, which Dee Wallace, always a delight. Never mad to see 80s Dee Wallace.
But Dee Wallace is in better movies, so if you're needing a shot of Dee Wallace, have you seen E.T. or The Howling?
No, this is definitely, don't, if you're needing some Dee Wallace in your life, don't pick this one as the first one. Just you decide which Dee Wallace you need. It's either The Howling or it's E.T. Now, for those of you who don't know what Cujo is about, even though we have pretty much given the plot here, our good buddies at IMDb and Max Nemesis want you to know that Cujo, a friendly Saint Bernard, contracts rabies and conducts a reign of terror on a small American town.
I'm going to give IMDb credit for using the word conduct, because that is what the dog is doing. He is orchestrating terror. He is like, ah, I am rabid now. I must bring terror to the humans. I will do so thusly. But what it's really about, it's the movie Beethoven, but it makes sense, damn it.
Wait, are you saying Beethoven didn't make sense to
I'm
you?
say I'm saying Cujo solves the problems, the plot holes of Beethoven.
Regardless, the villain of Beethoven is still going to get bit by either Saint Bernard.
All right. I gotta tell you my very, very favorite piece of Cujo trivia, which is that there are several moments in Cujo when Cujo is attacking someone, when they had to tape the dog's tail to his leg. That is my favorite, because when a dog is attacking somebody, he's playing. Okay, the canine actor is playing. And so Cujo has this big giant Saint Bernard tail, which is just wagging in the air. And so
I get
they
it,
had to tape his leg his tail to his leg so you wouldn't see this big giant tail wagging.
And they didn't do it successfully because you still see the tail wagging when, like, it's like, I can't remember
Yeah.
who gets attacked, but I saw that tail and I was just like, oh, Cujo baby.
Yeah, I can't remember if it's Gary or Joe where you still can see the tail wagging while he's eating.
Yeah, I think it's, but yeah, his tail's wagging. There's another shot where you see Cujo's handler's hand kind of pull him back out of the window, like, okay, you're gonna be scary. And then he was like, okay, we're done, let's go. I had more fun with this film watching for Cujo's tail to wag. And once you see it like take down, like you can spot it. Like we found the, like we're watching it and it's like, oh, there you can see the cord right there. You can see the tape. And then there's a couple of shots you definitely can tell it's the guy in the dog costume, which if you haven't seen those behind the scenes pictures of D, the director, and the stunt guy in the dog costume dancing around, I take a moment and look them up because they're unhinged and a delight. But also they used a meringue to do the foam, the rabid foam for Cujo, just, and they had to make, they
Oh,
had,
yeah, because he
and they
kept
had,
licking it off.
yes, yeah. So
Because of course he did.
yeah, right? So it sounds like we know the movie's not great, but it sounds like everybody, it was a delight to be on set to see shenanigans of the dogs.
Okay. And then you mentioned the four different canine
Yeah.
actors. And this is something that always irritates me. Okay. And I can remember way back when I would watch Westerns with Dad, and I would be like, that horse isn't even the same color. It's like he was riding a brown horse in the previous shot. What are, it's not the same horse. But like, just could you just like try to make this the same color? I mean, it's not even the same. It's not even the same like hair texture.
Yeah, like the Cujo you see at the beginning is short-haired Saint Bernard, completely different mask. The scary rabid Cujo is definitely a bulkier, bigger Saint Bernard, long fur, different mask, and yeah, it's, oh yeah. But he had, like, one of them has the big shaggy one had the big droopy eyes, one of them didn't, like, it's a whole thing. I see Mag just like,
The movie's not very good.
Not
That's
it's like that is not the same dog. You're just watching this film going, oh, there's another Saint Bernard. How many
yeah.
Saint Bernards are in this film? Are they all rabid? Is there a Saint Bernard rabies epidemic that nobody told me about?
I'm just saying, I'm already judging the family, so you know what?
The director walks into the studio, has Cujo's on a marker board, and he just writes an S on there and puts makes it a dollar sign and says, "Hey guys, let's go." Cujo's.
But then you could do, then it could match the IMDb summary of terrorizing the town. If there's multiple Cujos, and that
And
town's
they're
not that.
coordinating, they're having meetings and saying,
Yeah.
"Ah, yes, Steve Wallace is over here, but the town has many people in it."
Yeah. Forget D. Wallace and Danny. Let's go. Let's get that town. Obviously, there's a giant werewolf population anyway at that town because, in case you didn't know, when you see their house and the forest and the ocean, it's the same images that they used in The Howling. So obviously there's a werewolf population. The Cujos could handle that. Honestly, I'd pay to watch that movie.
I think we paid to watch this movie, so
Know what? That's fair.
that's not an important distinction.
No,
We paid to see some real movies here.
that's what we have. Donna or Mac mentioned about what this film would have been like if Carpenter had done it. Carpenter was offered this movie and he chose to do Christine instead, which, listen to this, and I didn't realize this. This, The Dead Zone, and Christine all came out in 83.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's a
like lot of Stephen King in
that's,
1983.
yeah.
Yeah.
And if The Dead Zone and this film hadn't been under different studios, they were going to reference each other. Like they had
Yeah.
in the script to do that, where it's going to talk, I think it was in this one, they were going to talk about Johnny, And since it was different films, they cut all of that out. I'm saying it would help this movie, but
It's just very keen to do that.
yeah, exactly.
They're very connected books.
Yeah. I'm seeing if I had any other little interesting notes. Oh, this film, sadly enough, was the fourth highest grossing horror film of 1983. Was in the top five. Yeah.
Fewer movies were released back then, so I'm like, it was, if it was top three grossers of all movies in 83, I'd be like, what? How bored were people in 83? I mean, granted, I was born in 84, so I can tell you exactly how bored some people were in 1983. Sorry, Mom.
I just want to say two things about the cast of this film. Christopher Stone, who I think was actually married to Dee Wallace, I feel like he was supposed to be Atkins with a T. He certainly looked like an Atkins with a T part.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that, and they were married during this. And for those of you who don't know, he played Kemp, the guy she was having an affair with. Yeah, I could definitely read that, but Chris Stone does not have the 80s machismo to pull off Atkins with a T. And I guess I left it very specific, Donna, because I saw you kind of give me a look. That's why I was like, no, we're going to say 80s machismo.
No, I agree. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Okay.
I agree. Atkins with a T is his own category of man.
Now, the sheriff in this and in, so there is a connection. The sheriff and this are both the same character, just played by different actors. It is
All
Sheriff
right.
George Bannerman.
Yeah.
I actually have written on my notes, no, Sheriff Bannerman, don't go.
Please come back.
But I actually want to talk about one more actor. But first, I want to talk about one of my favorite 80s films, which is a movie called Just One of the Guys.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. But I didn't realize this until my last time watching it. Just One of the Guys is a just ridiculous but still adorable movie about a young woman who thinks the only reason her writing is not successful is because she's a woman. Yeah, and so she dresses as a man and goes to a different high school. It stuff ensues. But her younger brother is this incredibly charismatic young man who is just, he steals the show, really. He's just got so much personality, and it's just, he takes over every scene he's in. He is just incredible. And he's played by the same actor that played Brett Camber. And it took me a few watchings to realize it. The last time I watched this, I sat there and I stared at Brett Camber going, I know that kid. Who is that? That totally personalityless young man. I know him. And I finally looked him up and was like, what? This kid who has no screen presence whatsoever is Buddy from Just One of the Guys? So anyway, I am not advocating Just One of the Guys as a great film, but it is a very entertaining film. And at the end of the film, there is a great set of tits. If you're into tits, there's a great set of tits at the end of the film. So I'm just saying, it's a pretty good film. It's an entertaining film. Great set of tits at the end.
It's very 80s. It is a comedy.
It is a comedy.
It is a comedy. I was trying to decide if I was going to say, I wouldn't call it a sex comedy like some of the 80s are known for, but
And Johnny from Karate Kid is in it. I
yeah.
don't mean the actor who plays Johnny from Karate Kid is in it. I
Same
mean,
character.
it's the same character
Oh yeah.
played by the same actor.
Hey, he knew his bread and butter, 'cause that same character shows up in Back to School, just now in college, from Karate Kid, so
Yeah, so anyway, but we're talking about Cujo now.
yeah.
But I was so excited to see that actor, even though he was absolutely stripped of any personality, which I know he is capable of displaying. So
But talking about him, that brings me to a question that I have had about this film. And since you have read the book, Donna, you have read a third of the book. Was the mechanic's wife leaving him permanently? And was that why she was packing up and was like, hey, no, don't tell your dad about Cujo having rabies? Like, that was the vibe I got with how she was packing up to go visit her sister, was she wasn't coming back. And I didn't know if that was something the book answers or just.
Not that I remember or got to.
Okay.
I don't think she was. I think she just really, really wanted to go on this trip.
Yeah,
Okay.
I think there was a little less dysfunction in the context of the book with the family.
Okay.
Like there, yeah.
I told you,
But
I already was watching The Family was suspect. They were suspecting me.
yeah.
So, okay. It was
Negligent but not dysfunctional.
okay. Like I said, just a read I got in the scene. So,
So I have a little mini lecture on rabies.
oh, yes.
I was really anticipating a larger lecture on rabies.
Well, I can go into, the rhabdovirus family if you like, but I don't think you
Split the
do.
difference.
Okay. So rabies is a virus that kills 70,000 people a year worldwide. Here in the United States, we lose about two people a year from rabies because of vaccination and prophylaxis. So in developed countries where we have rabies vaccination available and we have rabies prophylaxis available, we see a lot less problems with rabies, but there are parts of the world rather, that still lose thousands of people a year to rabies. And it is a really horrible disease. Historically, there are stories of people who would get bitten by a rabid animal and then just go kill themselves rather than die of rabies. So, what it causes is a viral encephalitis. Now, when you look at medical words, always, the little parts of the word all mean things. So the itis means inflammation. Whenever you see itis, that means inflammation. The encephala part of it refers to the brain.
Right.
Okay.
Swelling of the brain,
So,
yeah.
yeah. So viral encephalitis means a viral brain inflammation. One of the things that's most interesting to me about rabies is because it's an infection of the central nervous system, if you get bit by a rabid animal and you actually have the rabies virus replicating in your body, you don't have rabies. You don't have rabies just because you have rabies virus in your body. What you have is rabies exposure. So you
Okay.
get bit by rabies, you have rabies virus in your body replicating, it will find your peripheral nervous system. So the peripheral nervous system is nerves that are in your limbs, okay, or in your face. And then it will migrate up your peripheral nervous system till it finds your central nervous system, which is your spine and your brain. Once it's in your central nervous system, now you have rabies. Okay. And that can take, depending on the location of where you're bitten, that can take anywhere between days to months. The longest recorded time was 6 years.
Whoa.
They were able to confirm that bat did the biting 6 years ago, and they came down with rabies 6 years later. But generally, it's a few weeks. And from once that happens, it starts with what we call nonspecific viral symptoms. So there are actual recorded cases of a person going to the hospital and saying, "Man, I don't feel good." And they go, "You've got the flu, go home." And then a few days later, they break with definite rabies. But it progresses to a headache, and then anxiety, and then agitation, and then delirium. The frothing that you see at the mouth, that is one because they're hypersalivating, and two because their throat is spasming. So the other name that you'll see for it, hydrophobia, is because their throat spasms and they can't swallow specifically at the sight of water. And this is where we start talking about it being horrible, because these, wolves or coyotes or whatever will be literally dying of thirst and wanting to drink. And they'll see them standing in the water, barking at the water, because they really want to drink and they can't.
Oof.
So this is where every step of the way with the depiction of Cujo's disease, it was really accurate, because you saw him just kind of like, "Bleh, I don't feel good," and going to hide, and then getting really upset with the loud noises. That would have been the anxiety, the agitation, the headache. And then finally, specifically when you saw him being kind of aggressive with Brett Camber and then being like, "Nah," and wandering off into the fog, that would have been the onset of the delirium. I've got more, but I feel like that's enough for Cujo.
So what you're saying is, though, it does not give hyperintelligence, as we
Absolutely not. In fact, probably the opposite.
And that Dee Wallace probably made it despite her many bites.
Yeah, she would have been. Now, see, Cujo got bit on the nose.
Right.
The time it takes to become infected has a lot to do with how far the distance is from the bite to your central nervous system. So he got bit on the nose, which is a very short distance from the bite to the central nervous system. She got bit on the leg, which is a much further distance.
I mean, I saw her getting bit, and I was like, well, that's a
Yeah.
picture wrap for Dee Wallace. Good night, everybody.
So yeah, no, she would have been able to get post-exposure prophylaxis, where they would have pumped her full of antibodies and they would have given her a rabies vaccine and various other treatment. But yeah, it was just a day or two after she got bit that she would have gotten treatment, so she would have been fine.
Okay, now what about Tad drinking her bloody water that she's trying to
Oh no, he would have been fine. He
Okay.
would have been fine. Because now, so here's a really neat
Fine's a
thing.
relative term.
Yes. As far as
Yes.
drinking her bloody water.
Yes.
So the virus gets to the brain, and once it gets to the brain, then it goes to the salivary glands. And that's how you get rabies, is you get rabies from the saliva of an infected person,
Okay.
or not person, infected
Entity.
entity. So yeah, just it's not contact with fluids, it's contact with specifically saliva.
So don't
Okay.
kiss rabid people. Noted.
Yeah, that's actually a really good rule. That is a very good rule. Don't kiss rabid people is a very good rule. Yes.
Gonna make out with something. Are you rabid? Are you rabid?
Have you had your
Yeah.
shots?
By the way, I have been vaccinated for rabies as a
That seems
veterinarian.
like a very wise precaution in the
Agreed.
veterinary field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. So I feel that's a good choice.
Maybe
Being
working at the Social Security office, I should probably do that too, but that's a different.
that's a different
So,
Yeah. Different. Not entirely different, but different.
so that is the rabies corner.
All right. Yeah, because that was always my with this film, with all of her bites that she had, it's like, well, she's rabid now. And then just this recent watch, when they get into the house, instead of getting a glass down, she's cupping her hands to bring Tad water. I was like, well, now that feels like cross-contamination, and Tad is now infected.
Yeah, no, Tad has lots of issues, but that's not one of them.
He was having seizures, right? We're all clear on in the car.
Hyperventilating at least. Yeah, and then once the eyes are rolling back, he was,
Okay. Yeah,
yeah.
he was having seizures. In fact, one of the bits of trivia from this film that I find entertaining is when he's having the seizure and she starts yelling, ow, ow. The child actor actually did bite her. That's actually Dee Wallace yelling, ow, ow, because the kid actually bit her.
Let's talk about the wonders and lovableness of the Saint Bernards. Mac, would you I will I know you were the one that mentioned about the rabbit, so I'm gonna have you open
You,
us up.
I think we'll all have a different, slightly different perspective on this, but ultimately that we don't buy the initial rabbit fight. My, like, we can talk about the quickness of a Saint Bernard a lot, but the problem is that dog has that rabbit in its mouth, and then the rabbit makes a run for it. Like, yes, I think once the rabbit's in the dog's mouth, the game's over.
That rabbit did not make a run for it. That rabbit made a jog for it. I saw a rabbit run for it just yesterday. I was mowing the lawn and a rabbit took off. And I've seen rabbits run.
Sure.
That rabbit was like, oh no, there's a
Right.
dog. Oh, I'm so scared.
Maybe
Oh
it made the
no.
rabbit made the correct assessment that, oh, it's a Saint Bernard. I don't really have to get the cardio going for this one. And that's all fine.
Yeah.
But the moment of wham, I'm like, come on. I fundamentally don't fear this dog's bites, rabbit or not, if the rabbit made it out.
So I don't fundamentally fear the dog anyway, because let me tell you, as someone that has owned and grown up with Saint Bernards, I have seen a Saint Bernard not be able to chase a very overweight squirrel. So there's not a lot of hustle, is what I'm saying, in the Saint Bernard. There's not a lot. Also, I've never seen an overweight squirrel until I saw one get into deer corn, but that's something else entirely.
Yeah, Saint Bernards are a lot more into snoozing on the couch than they are into chasing rabbits.
Snoozing on the couch, snoozing against the wall with their legs straight up, which is adorable, or tucked in. Now, I will say that Editor Billy did have his very own kind of Cujo-esque moment.
Go on.
When he moved out here, he had a Geo Metro, which, if you know, Geo Metros are not a very, very big car. And it was the first time, because we were dating, so the first time meeting my folks, meeting their dog Bear, who was a Saint Bernard, and we pull into the driveway. He turns the car off and turns around, and Bear is right there against the glass, just waiting to greet us. And here I am beside him going, "Oh, that's Bear! Oh, look at Bear! Just he's such a good boy." And there's a giant dog that's right here. So Editor Billy did have his own Cujo-esque moment.
What did Editor Billy think of that?
Oh, he was like, "Oh, hi, Bear." Now, he was more caught off guard, not expecting the dog to be right there, because he knew a bear, seen pictures of bear. He knew bear existed. He just
Okay.
was not expecting bear to basically open the door for him and offer to take, his overnight bag. That was the vibe of it all. But yeah. So yeah, Editor Billy had his own little Cujo moment.
That's fantastic. When I was a kid, we had Irish wolfhounds who are, ginormous. And I remember a friend driving me home. And when we got to the house, the Irish wolfhound just walked up to the car and put his chin down on, her window. And she was just screaming, "Oh my God, don't let him bite me. Oh my God, don't let him bite me." And I was like, "He's not going to bite you. He might kiss you, but he's bite you. I don't understand what you're afraid of, but all right." But then I guess most people aren't used to seeing a dog the size of a pony.
Yeah, I was gonna say Irish
True.
wolfhounds, those are big boys.
Those are a big boy.
That's a big boy. Back on Saint Bernards, the first Saint Bernard my folks had, his name was Moose, and Moose had the love seat, which was his love seat. Now, if he let you share the love seat with him, he'd kind of scooch over. And one night, my friend came over. And we're just sitting there talking, getting ready before heading out. And she sat on his love seat. And he just stood in front of her and stared at her and huffed at her. Didn't bark, didn't growl, just very put out by the whole situation. And she's like, "What is?" And she asked me, she's like, "What is he doing, Kinsey?" I said, "Oh," I said, "You're in his seat." And she's like, so she gets up, she's like, "I'm sorry, Moose." And so, moves over, immediately hops up there, then looks at me like, "Well, you're going to sit beside me, right? That's fine." So, yes, Saint Bernards, they don't have a lot of get up and go. Unless it's to the couch. So, just to announce, Donna has the hat trick for our rural poll and quote.
Appropriate for this
I think
movie.
so too. Like, it feels right, it feels good. We all had different quotes that we wanted, but as always with the quotes, we if there's one that shows up on all of ours, that's usually how we pick it. This one, which Donna, take it away.
Fuck you, dog.
I'll give the movie credit for not making that the last line before D-Wall stabs the dog. It's the moment of hubris. I'm getting away. Fuck you, dog.
Yeah.
Oh no. Pinto!
If this was made today, that would have been the final line. With our rule, we were very unanimous with the rule, and we feel it's just appropriate that Donna says our rule and gives our rule, but we were across the board.
Vaccinate your pets.
A lot of problems would be solved with this.
If Cujo were up to date on his vaccinations, we would not have had a movie.
No.
Well, we would have had a very mediocre family drama.
Yeah, that,
Story about the heroism of housewives sleeping with other men.
so
Probably
brave.
would have sold as about as many copies of the book. We salute you, American housewives, for not putting up with that shit.
All right. And Donna has our poll.
How should Donna Trenton have answered the question, yes or no?
For context, the question is being asked if she was having an affair.
Now, to me, one of the laziest ways to write is to have a plot hinge on two characters who should have a conversation, not have a conversation. So it would have made a lot of sense for these two characters to have a conversation, and they did not have a conversation. So let's back up. And I want to start off by saying, as your poltergeists have been very clear on our opinion of infidelity. Okay. We're not into infidelity. No. All right. So I'm in no way saying that Donna should have been out there sleeping with the tennis pro. That's not what I'm saying. Okay.
She's not talking in the third person, podcast listeners. Just keep with us.
I'm not married. I can sleep with the tennis pro if I want to.
That's true.
That's
true.
Very true.
But no, I'm talking about Dee Wallace. I'm not saying that it was cool that she right. was cheating on her husband. That's not what I'm saying at all. But so she was bored. That's basically the thing. She was cheating on her husband because she was bored. That's not made clear in the movie, made clear in the book. She was just bored. So not an okay reason to cheat on your husband, but that's what was going on. So she was cheating on her husband. She had this realization that, oh, actually, I really value what I have. So she goes to the guy she's cheating with, says, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm happy. I don't want to do this anymore. So she goes back. Then he comes to her and says, I'm not happy without you. And she says, yeah, that sucks. That's too bad. And then he tries to force himself on her. No, I've been euphemistic. He tries to rape her.
Yeah.
She fights him off. In the course of fighting him off, we knock some eggs and some milk on the ground. That is when husband comes home with kid, finds wife on the floor trying to clean up milk and eggs, finds tennis pro in the kitchen. Also, they're both breathing hard. Tennis pro looks guilty. Wife looks scared. And once the room is cleared, husband goes, yes or no? And she says, yes. Now, here's the problem. As was previously said, what he's asking is, are you having an affair, yes or no? And the question she answered was, yes, I did sleep with him. It's not the same answer, okay? And there just needed to be a lot more words. There needed to be a lot more words. Yes was not an adequate answer to that question. Okay, go.
So I have a lot of problems with Vic anyway in this film. I think he's kind of garbage. And I'm not advocating lovely Dee Wallace to look elsewhere, but Vic is pretty garbage. And the fact that his answer earlier in the beginning of the film is, oh, let's have another kid to solve our marital difficulties. Like, the fuck?
Steve's garbage, too. It's a garbage sort of pool that she's pulling from.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not. Yeah, we Donna helped establish Steve is not great. By right. any means. And the fact that he gets a very impractical Jaguar car, gets it fixed first before his wife's car that takes their kid to school and everything. Like, I have a lot of issues with Vic. I don't disagree that there should have been a longer conversation. I don't think she should have answered yes or no. I think she should have said, I was having an affair. Mm-hmm. I think that might have changed a little bit of things, because yeah, I think I like that this, it's not saying that she's bored, that's why she had the affair. I like mm-hmm. that it is, he's not great. Like, they, I mean, there's problems all around. He's not mm-hmm. not great either. So yeah, I agree there should have been, I think she should have emphasized the past tense, because yeah, she did do it, and then that should in theory open up a larger conversation.
Yes.
I think in that moment, and this is really me defending the family drama of this, and I did not expect to be put into this position.
I didn't either.
Yeah. I get it. We, as writers, we've often talked about the pat quality of a plot hinging on two characters needing to have a conversation, but not. But then again, human beings are not great at having the necessary conversation at the necessary time. So I tend to be a little more lenient when that's dragged out. It's cliched, so it's overused, and a smarter story would have put more obstacles between them. But they also had a dog to get to, because you look at the poster. I think the poll question not only is what should be the answer, the poll question is should that have been the question? It's both. I think, given Vic's obliviousness, that may be the only question he can reach for in that moment. And I think he's got all the evidence he needs to convict at that moment. So anything other than the honest yes would have worked against Donna's stated goal of putting things back together. Because if she had literally said no, then he would have been, well, clearly you're lying. That's even worse. Yes is obviously going to be a hurdle, and a nuanced answer of I was is essentially yes. So I don't know. Don't cheat on your spouse. Maybe don't get put in that situation. I don't know. That's the answer.
You made a really good point, Matt, that the idea that what was needed in that moment was just truth. That's a really good point. I was kind of looking at it because I hate to keep harping on this. I just want to make it really clear that I'm not okay that Donna cheated.
Right.
But I am nonetheless looking at it from her point of view of she's just been attacked in her home. I mean, she is the attacker is literally still there when he walks in. And the first thing he does is accuse her. And I understand why he does that. I mean, I'm not oblivious to why he does that. I'm just very sympathetic to the fact that she's on her knees having just been attacked. And that's the first thing her husband does is accuse her. And I'm fairly sympathetic to her in that moment.
And I think the movie doesn't truck with the same thing that the book does, where Steve is a real asshole and writes Vic a letter describing a particular mole on Donna and saying, "I really enjoyed fucking your wife." So I'm having that stuck in my head that he is absolutely certain, but he needs her to admit it before they can move on to whatever's next, whether it's divorce or reconciliation or whatever. So, and I think that's stuck in my head, and the movie doesn't do that. So in the context of the movie, I think you're right that he should have taken his foot off the gas and been more about the actual immediate situation and not his immediate concerns.
I think myself, I would have been like, no, this is a more nuanced situation. I'm not giving you a yes or no. But yeah, you make a really good point, Mac, about what was needed.
And I mean, and I think Vic not addressing your wife clearly upset on the floor cleaning up something that happened, and this is what you're drilling into. You need to look, not have tunnel vision. And that's kind of what he has in that moment.
But again, he's a garbage human.
I think she's got grounds for divorce. No one has grounds for infidelity.
There you go. I like that.
There you go.
I like that. I like that a lot, Mac.
An excellent summation of the situation. Unless that's the thing in your marriage, if you do,
If that's,
your life is your business, and
I'm
we're not here to judge that.
fundamentally too misanthropic to be including other people in that arena.
Same.
You know, and as long as there's been a discussion happen between all parties involved, you know.
But even then, okay, not judging, but just as a matter of practicality, there's always like for the people who do that sort of thing, they're always going an inch beyond whatever, parameters they've established for themselves. It's like, oh, we're fine as long as we do this, this, and this. But sometimes I do the fourth thing. And it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. You're so.
The pinky wiggle was too much for me.
It was, and I sensed it in the moment, but I stand by it. How else was I visually, for our podcast listeners, signify a fourth thing than do that?
No, whatever is cool in your relationship is cool. That is you do you, and there's no judgment here.
a theme I've
Exactly.
gone from no kink shaming, just not kink participation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can not co-sign and not shame you at the same time.
Cujo took a turn for all of us.
Who just set us up? It spends an hour of its 90 minutes on, oh, the marriage.
All right, I will go first on Happy Place. Tulsa PAC just finished their current season with Tina, which we saw on Thursday. It's fantastic, a lot of fun. And this year, Tulsa PAC's Broadway season has just, to me, knocked it out the park. We got to see Beetlejuice. We saw Aaron Sorkin's To Kill a Mockingbird, which was really great to see. Tina was fantastic. There were some other great shows thrown in there as well. Next year, looking equally really good. And so, yeah, just celebrating and supporting the Tulsa Arts at the PAC. That's my happy place. And if you can catch a show, I recommend it. They do some good stuff, bring some good stuff to town.
I was on vacation most of the week, and the thing that I did not expect to be as fun as it was, I went down to the gathering place in Tulsa for a walk and realized I was really, really out of shape and didn't make it very far. So then I was like, oh, these little weird electric scooters that are everywhere, I'm gonna try one of these. And so I did, and I had a ball. I went from like 21st all the way to River Spirit Casino at like 81st or 91st, just going wee the whole time. And it was good. Yeah, just like, yeah, I might do it again today. I was that into the whole thing.
You know, I've been school, finished up, finals week ended up, and I've been out for the last week, and it's been really nice. The finals week is always, I don't know, man. I kind of go back and forth between feeling like I should just really let these students sink or swim on their own, and then there's part of me that's like, you know, I think there's plenty of professors that let them sink on their own. So I always have just a couple of students that I'm chasing down going, hey, if you would just go ahead and turn this assignment in, you could get an A. If you would just go ahead and do this thing, you know, we could get you up a letter grade. And so I always spend that last few days chasing down students and say, you are 5 points from the next letter grade. And my favorite was this one student who was begging me for extra credit to get an A. And I was like, I can't give you extra credit that I don't make available to everybody else. But there actually is extra credit that has been available since March. You could go do that. And then she got it all done and turned it in and then sent me an email telling me how awesome I was. And I was like, well, I am.
Yeah.
But that's been available since March. So good job. You got an A. So I don't know. I always kind of go back and forth between how many people out there are going to take these students and grab them and drag them across the finish line. I don't know. But does it hurt them that I'm one of them? I don't think it does.
No, I don't think it does.
So there. I have this little, but I don't know. I helped these students, and that makes me feel good. So,
There you go. Well, you can find us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We're Beyond the Cabin in the Woods. Our website and Blue Sky username is beyondthecabininthewoods.com. I am on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky as at Callista77.
you can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky at Dragon Goblin. There's no I in Goblin. It's dragongoblin.com on Blue Sky.
I'm at Party Apocalypse on any available socials. I'm not really there all that often. I think, as I've said on previous episodes, for a guy heavily involved in three active podcasts, I am surprisingly offline. But the website, partyapocalypse.com, includes this podcast and other fine podcasts, including The Holodeck is Broken with myself and Laura and Canyon and Eris. The three of them also host Disorganized, a Criminal Minds podcast. There are full runs of As the Myth Turns, Friendables, Two Friends Talking About Hannibal Lecter, and The Fourth Wall, books, blogs, movie reviews, nothing else, the end.
As always, thank you to our editor, Billy. You make us sound fantastic and professional. We do appreciate all that you do behind the scenes and rein us in and make us sound good.
We love you, Billy.
And thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us if you aren't already doing so.
And don't read the Latin.
Work.